Today is Thursday, December 20th, 2018, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, President Trump's decision to pull U.S. troops out of Syria is drawing mixed reactions.
I've never seen anything like it in my life.
It's magical and it's overwhelming at the same time. You don't know where to look. There's so much going on.
We'll visit a house that captures the spirit of Christmas, and we'll remember the people we said goodbye to this year. It's all in today's International Edition. The White House is defending its decision to start bringing U.S. troops in Syria back home. This comes after U.S. President Donald Trump declared victory over the Islamic State on Wednesday. The announcement left many members of Mr. Trump's Republican Party in the Senate in shock. Outgoing Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Corker said to his knowledge, U.S. allies weren't consulted, adding that leaving the SDF hanging before Syria and Turkey is, in his words, a terrible thing. VOA's Victor Beatty spoke with former Ambassador David Mack, a scholar at the Middle East Institute, and asked him whether victory can be declared over the Islamic State.
I don't think that's at all clear. There's almost certainly a considerable number of Daesh or ISIS members who stayed behind in one place or another. We know that there are substantial numbers along the Iraqi-Syrian border in some of those difficult-to-reach enclaves, and they will make problems. They will make problems in the future for the Syrian people. They will almost certainly make problems for the Iraqis, and they're certainly going to make a lot of problems for Kurds in both places. So I don't think it's at all clear that we have achieved the mission that we initially started out with, which was to eliminate the presence of this so-called Islamic State and to make sure that it couldn't recoalesce in the future.
There's a view that this plays well with the president's view that the U.S. should not be involved in open-ended conflicts. And, of course, the U.S. presence began under his predecessor, Barack Obama, who was also reluctant to get involved.
That's certainly the case. And certainly, I think President Trump was reluctant from the beginning. He's been, to a certain extent, cajoled into doing this by his military and civilian advisors and some of the senior people in the Congress. Among other things, they have pointed out to him that he criticized President Obama for having withdrawn too quickly from Iraq. And I think that this is likely to come back and haunt the president.
This decision comes just days after Turkey has threatened another military incursion into northern Syria that would directly impact U.S. operations and the Syrian Democratic Forces. Did that have any impact, you think?
Oh, yes. I can imagine that the president thought, well, this is causing a difficulty in the relations with Turkey. Let's just take it off the table, the way he took Jerusalem off the table, the way he's taken the Palestinian refugees off the table. The way he sees it is if there is an issue that is causing an ongoing problem, we just say it's no longer an issue. And I think that's what he's trying to do here.
What happens to our Kurdish allies?
They're already distraught. In fact, although I've certainly not followed foreign reaction to this to any great degree, I've already been contacted by people who say that there's great consternation among Kurds in both northeastern Syria, where they've been our principal allies on the ground, and the Kurds in Iraq, with whom we also have long-term relationships.
Jennifer Caffarella, Director of Intelligence Planning at the Institute for the Study of War, wonders, if the president is willing to walk away from Syria, we should be concerned about whether Afghanistan is next. Writing for the website Atlantic.com, Corey Shake, Deputy Director General of the International Institute for Strategic Studies, said, the governments of Iraq and Afghanistan ought to be very, very worried. Among the top stories in the world, Russian President Putin praises the U.S. withdrawal from Syria, calling their presence there an impediment to peace in the region. Mexico has agreed to a U.S. proposal to let third country migrants remain in or be returned to Mexico while their claims for asylum in the United States are being processed. The charity Doctors Without Borders says more people are dying in Yemen from diseases and lack of health care than from the war itself. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers from the University of Southern California have pieced together a brutal prehistoric encounter between an early shark ancestor and a flying dinosaur. By studying fossils, the researchers found that the flying creature called a pterosaur met a violent end sometime during the late Cretaceous period, 66 to 100 million years ago, when a fast and powerful shark, nicknamed a Ginsu shark, leaped out of the water and bit it in the neck. The flying pterosaur was thought to have had a wingspan of about 5.5 meters and weighed about 45 kilograms. The Ginsu shark was about 2.5 meters long, and while they are not closely related, had an appearance and behavior like today's great white shark. Gathered in the 1960s, the fossils were found in an area of the central United States that was once home to a giant waterway known as the Western Interior Seaway. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition. African migrants coming to Europe dream of landing a good job, but the reality is usually much harder, working on the streets, collecting garbage, or picking fruit and vegetables in the fields. The migrants are not legally allowed to work while they wait for asylum claims to be processed, which can take months or years, so they are forced into the black market. As Henry Ridwell reports, the city of Barcelona is becoming a hub for migrants in Spain, where the number of new arrivals has risen sharply this year to more than 55,000.
On the sidewalks of Barcelona, they are a common sight, mainly African migrants heaving shopping carts full of scrap metal, scoured from building sites and backyards, often weighing hundreds of kilograms. It is back-breaking and badly paid work, but a means of survival. A cartload can be sold to recycling firms for around $35, or $50 if they are lucky. Supporters say they are doing a valuable job. Critics argue they are part of a black market increasingly run by criminal gangs who exploit the migrants. So authorities are stepping in to clean up the business. Alencop is a city-run cooperative that offers some protection for the collectors. They offer Barcelona residents timetabled collections and special appointments, collection by van or bike, job security and a guaranteed price for the migrants. Among them is Eric Cutter, who arrived in Spain last year from Ghana.
Alencop has done many things for me, because I entered Alencop without papel, without anything, but now I have my documents.
Cutter was unprepared for how tough life would be.
What is different is, I knew that if I enter here, things will be difficult as I get in here. Because I think Europe is very rich as I hear before. But when I enter here, no, things are not as I was thinking.
Other migrants in the city have carved out their own commercial niche, selling mainly counterfeit goods on the streets. They are known as manteros, because they sell their goods on blankets or mantas. If the police come, everything is wrapped in the blanket for a quick getaway. Local store owners say they are losing business. Fermín Vilar is from the campaign group Top Manta, created by Barcelona shopkeepers.
En estos momentos, hay personas que se han acostumbrado tanto al volumen de negocio.
Vilar says there are those who have become so accustomed to the profits from selling illegal goods that it does not compensate them to enter the legalized and regulated world. He adds a host country must manage immigration quickly or society will reject it, and that is a danger because nobody wins. The sharp rise in the number of migrants arriving in Spain is ramping up pressure on the government to stem the flow of new arrivals and to better integrate the migrants already here. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Barcelona, Spain.
U.S. prosecutors unsealed charges Thursday accusing two hackers linked to Chinese intelligence of hacking more than 45 tech companies over the course of a decade. The charges are the latest brought by the Justice Department against Chinese hackers. The hackers are charged with conspiracy to commit computer intrusions, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and aggravated identity theft. Officials describe the two as members of a hacking group known to cybersecurity experts as the APT-10 Group. The charges come after officials last week accused hackers working on behalf of China of carrying out a massive data breach involving millions of Marriott customers. This is VOA's International Edition. Whether it was their accomplishments on Earth or in outer space, some notable people died in 2018. From singers to fashion designers to a former U.S. president, VOA's Mariama Diallo has more.
I miss you, my friend.
Singer Smokey Robinson paid an emotional tribute to his childhood friend Aretha Franklin, who died this year following a long battle with pancreatic cancer. Franklin was the recipient of 18 Grammy Awards and sold more than 75 million records. Loved ones, celebrities, and political leaders, including former U.S. President Bill Clinton, were among the thousands to honor her.
She lived with courage, not without fear, but overcoming her fears.
Movie fans said goodbye to 1970s sex symbol Burt Reynolds and comic fans to Marvel comic magnate Stan Lee, who died at the age of 95.
That's for you, Stan Lee. That's for you, baby. You always will live in this heart forever.
The world also lost British physicist and author Stephen Hawking. He died at 76 in his home in Cambridge.
Stephen Hawking was a huge personality worldwide. He had this amazing ability to connect with people.
The fashion industry bid farewell to American and French designers Kate Spade and Hubert de Givenchy. An homage for Givenchy showcased dresses inspired by the creator's most iconic designs worn by stars like Audrey Hepburn and Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. Spade took her own life. TV evangelist Billy Graham also died this year at the age of 99. Graham, who preached to millions around the world, was considered one of the leading spiritual voices of the 20th century.
I want to ask you tonight, do you love God? Do you love him with all your heart, with all your soul?
In South Africa, thousands of mourners packed a 40,000-seat stadium to celebrate the powerful anti-apartheid icon Winnie Mandela, who died at the age of 81. Africa lost another of its beloved figures, former United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan. A Nobel Peace Prize winner, Annan was hailed as a guiding force for good. Astronaut Alan Bean, who walked on the moon, died at the age of 86. Bean traveled to the moon almost 50 years ago as a member of the Apollo 12 mission.
Well, it was like you won the lottery, only even better.
And a member of an American political dynasty died in 2018. Family and friends, including four former U.S. presidents and President Donald Trump, packed into the Washington National Cathedral's prayer hall to mourn U.S.'s 41st president, George Herbert Walker Bush.
A great and noble man, the best father a son or daughter could have. And in our grief, let us smile knowing that Dad is hugging Robin and holding Mom's hand again.
The late Bush was laid to rest in Texas next to his wife, who also died this year, and their daughter Robin, who died of leukemia at the age of 3. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, The Voice of America.
I'm Jim Bertel, and this is VOA's International Edition. Christmas is a time for giving. For one man, that means decorating his house with over-the-top Christmas displays to warm people's hearts. It's a family tradition which Kurt Farmer took over from his father. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to the home full of Christmas spirit in Alexandria, Virginia.
You cannot miss the Farmer House on this quiet street in Alexandria, Virginia during the Christmas season.
Never seen anything like it in my life.
It's magical and it's overwhelming at the same time. You don't know where to look. There's so much going on.
And that's the whole idea, says Kurt Farmer, who spent nearly 300 hours putting up the amazing lights and decorations.
Flying Santa. That takes me right back to my childhood. I mean, it's in the exact same place it has been for 40 years.
Kurt grew up helping his father put up the annual display that started small and grew into a big production. After Kurt's mother died, his father moved out of the house. Then Kurt moved into the family home and carried on his father's tradition.
I want to continue what my father started in making people happy and kind of forgetting about the real world for a little while.
Now Kurt's 9-year-old daughter Lily lends a hand.
I just like helping him and doing some of the work.
And it's great that people keep traditions going. It's just lovely. It's like you're transported into a different, like, Christmas world.
Kurt asks for the same Christmas present every year, more decorations.
I make a list for Santa. These things are things I want to add. Santa's been very, very good to me. We leave the lights on so he never misses the house.
3 years ago, Kurt fell while putting up decorations and spent months learning how to walk again. But despite his injuries, he was back on the roof the following year, determined to set up his cherished display. Kurt feels his mother's spirit with him.
I just kind of sit there and just kind of take it all in. There's a hand on my shoulder saying, hey, this looks pretty neat.
I think it's spectacular that someone would take the time to put this much effort into it for the kids.
Kurt likes watching the children get excited, but he enjoys seeing the reaction from adults even more.
The adults can walk through and usually see something somewhere that reminds them of when they were growing up. It's important to make people happy and take them back to their childhood.
Kurt would like the visitors to leave with this feeling.
Like they just got a nice warm hug.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
To see this crazy Christmas house for yourself, please visit voanews.com. Well, as Christmas approaches, many Americans will head to their local theaters to see the latest blockbusters. Lori London spoke with Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard about two of the season's big movies, Mary Poppins Returns and Aquaman.
Well, you know, Disney runs Marvel, and Marvel's had incredible success with their films, from the Avengers films to you name it. They are just making money hand over fist. They're popular. They're well done. And DC has, and Warner Brothers is having a really rough time of it. Their movies are not doing as well. They're too dark. They're not too family friendly. You know, from Justice League to Man of Steel to the Batman. They really need a hit. And now we have Aquaman. And probably one of the most laughable, lesser-known characters in the Justice League. I mean, he talks to fish. I mean, you know, it was kind of interesting to see why they chose Aquaman to this. But we have director James Wan, who is just an incredible visionary. He directed The Conjuring and Conjuring 2, so he really knows how to do thrillers. He really knows how to stage suspense, and he knows how to stage, incredible visuals. And so now we have Jason Momoa, who plays Aquaman. And Aquaman is a half-breed, meaning that the Queen of Atlantis, played by Nicole Kidman, she was going to be executed because she was betrothed to a marriage she didn't want to do. So she ends up going up to the upper world, meeting a man who runs this lighthouse and falling in love with him. So they have a baby, the half-breed. But of course, the King of Atlantis finds out exactly where she's at, and she goes back to Atlantis to save her family, her human family. Of course, now, as Aquaman grows up, you know, he becomes this blue-collar kind of guy that lives on the East Coast, you know, like on the main somewhere in a lighthouse with his father. So when Atlantis comes calling, because Patrick Wilson is his brother, his half-brother, he wants to wage a war on the upper world above. And, of course, they come to Aquaman and say, look, you're the true king. We need you. We need you to come save not only your world but ours, too, and unite all seven seas, all the seven kingdoms. If that's not enough of the story to go on in this two-hour-plus movie, then we also have the classic comic villain who gets an introduction, the Black Manta. So, essentially, his real name is Arthur. He's King Arthur. The main part of the movie is Aquaman is looking for the special trident left by an ancient king that can unite the kingdom. It's got incredible special effects. Jason Momoa owns being Aquaman because he plays it with this real straightforward blue-collar kind of guy. He's just amazing. He is so perfect for this part. This is going to be a big hit for DC and for Warner Brothers. It's already grossed over $200 million worldwide, and this is going to be the holiday movie to rake in the cash. Also, it's a lot of fun. It's family-friendly. I was really surprised to see how there was some serious tones to the movie, but overall, absolutely can you take the kids to it, unlike some of the previous Warner Brother DC comic films. And here's what's cool. We're going to talk about Mary Poppins Return next, but get this. One of the sea creatures, this giant kind of kraken creature that guards the trident, is voiced by none other than Dame Julie Andrews.
Wow.
So how crazy is that?
Yeah,
so
cool.
There's this giant, nasty sea creature, and she's the one voicing the creature. So I thought that was really interesting that she turned down $1 million in Mary Poppins Returns just for a cameo, but she decided to do the other big holiday film, Aquaman. It's a winner. It's going to be a nice series that they're going to do some more films to. Stay through the credits because there's Easter eggs to watch. This is the movie to see this holiday season.
All right, and then, of course, as you said, Mary Poppins Returns. I'm very excited about this one. And you've seen it, right?
Oh, absolutely. I saw it actually a few weeks ago. Disney showed it to all the critics because they were so excited about it, and rightfully so. This is not a retelling of Mary Poppins. This is an actual sequel.
Mm.
You know, the children that in the original film are now adults.
Oh, wow.
And they have children now. The brother and sister have children. Mm-hmm. And Michael Banks learns that his house is going to be repossessed in 5 days unless he can pay back this loan. They have to find this missing certificate that shows proof of shares in the bank that his father left them. Now, when they all seem things are lost, Mary Poppins shows up, their beloved nanny, now played by Emily Blunt, who can sing, who can act, who is just ultimately the most charming Mary Poppins since Julie Andrews. But she holds her own. She kind of gives her own identity to Mary Poppins. And Lin-Manuel Miranda plays this lamplighter, just like the chimney sweep Bert that Dick Van Dyke did in the original. He brings another kind of narration, and he bookends the movie, and he's in love with Jane Banks, and he is just a joy in the movie, too. All new songs by Mark Shaiman, who did Hairspray, and he's just a well-known composer in Hollywood. Very, very addicting songs. You're going to come out tapping. You have cameos by Dick Van Dyke and Angela Lansbury as well. The great David Warner plays Admiral Boone. This is so much fun. I mean, I was smiling from ear to ear because they captured the essence of the original film.
Can't wait to see that. That's Jeffrey K. Howard. Find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Thanks for joining us, and our thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Rob McLean, and I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Thanks for listening.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.